Welcome to Let's Talk About Tests Baby, a weekly podcast about software testing, QA processes, agile, and other general geekery. My name's Jem Hill, and I'll be your host. So listeners, I wanted to revisit mobile testing a little bit. As I realised last week, I focused a lot on choosing the devices and tools, and then didn't we talk about testing and using those tools beyond how you would use a phone normally? And that was a little reductive, I think, especially when I went on about websites being easier, and they are easier, but there's still some stuff around that that's fairly complex. I think part of that is that a lot of the work on mobile is done in the requirements capture stage and talking about how is this feature going to work on mobile then. Like, I've had more than one client forget that you can't hover on a mobile device, so they want to do is say, oh, I need to do this on hover. And I'm like, well, what's going to happen on a mobile device because you can't hover and that kind of stuff. But there are some nifty things out in the tools out there that you can do with mobile testing. Chrome developer tools are really good, actually. Sometimes their emulation is not up to scratch. I've noticed some things on an actual device that didn't show on the Chrome version of that device. But the location spoofing is quite good. I've used that quite a bit to test like postcodey things and on Magento sites, which are commerce sites, and they do a lot of network throttling emulation as well, which is quite nice. Also, the cursor turns into a little circle, so you can it emulates the touch area, which is obviously different to a cursor, and that's quite nice. And things like helps you emulate swiping and making sure that you've not got too wide an area. Like, for on maps on phones, sometimes if the map fills up too much of the screen, you can't actually swipe the screen because it swipes the map. And so having that sort of wider than a cursor on a screen to emulate that, if you can't use that device or if you haven't got that device, is quite useful because BrowserStack still has a cursor, I think. And so it's not quite as realistic as it could be. So yes, I wanted to talk about that briefly. And having talked about that briefly, I want to move on to part two of this arc and talk about desktop cross-browser testing. So, like with mobile devices, you can't support every browser fully. It is like trying to hit WCAG, AAA. It's impossible for all areas of a site or an application to work fine in all browsers, and even then, due to some vagaries of plugins and setups and OSs or versions or whatever, you're not going to hit all the users. So you hit the most you can sensibly and then try to degrade as gracefully as possible, because as long as people can use it on IE7, does it matter if it's not as pretty as if they were sensible and using another browser, even if it's another version of IE? Everyone has their own weird setups. I have a colleague who has put Fedora on his Mac because he couldn't get on with OS X at all. And no one is going to test that out other than him. That is the centre of that Venn diagram. But you still want to make sure as many people as possible can use the site or app. At work, we've been revising our browser policy in light of Windows kicking pretty much every version of IE apart from 11 out to the curb, unless people on Vista or whatever. But basically speaking, it's IE11 or Edge, I think, are the ones that they've still got in full support. So we've been trying to figure out how we migrate any sort of support that we have in place currently to a new support contract, what ones we support with projects going forward, things like that. We always have the latest of each, and definitely at least one back on IE. Because for Chrome and Firefox, chances are people are updating automatically. For Safari, we do latest as well, because again, they tend to upgrade automatically and on a regular basis. And so we've been researching market share, and it does look like IE11 is actually the most popular IE on desktop, which is quite good. The next one, oddly, is IE8, but we would never support IE8. That is a gracefully degraded. It's only 2% of users who use IE that aren't using IE11 use IE8, and then it's IE9 or IE10 and then IE9, whatever. There's a graph on my site. So that's kind of how you should define the browsers you're willing to support. And you've got a sort of idea of what browsers you need to be testing everything in to make sure it looks perfect, and what browsers you're going, well, it looks fine, and it's usable. Obviously, you don't want the site to look absolutely shit in anything, but there's a sliding scale of how does it look and does it function. Once again, I generally only test the latest versions of Chrome or Firefox, because generally speaking, even if someone pulls out a slightly older version, the differences aren't that major. And if they are, we'll just say, well, you need to upgrade your Firefox or Chrome and go from there, because chances are the older ones have got security issues anyway, and that's why they're being upgraded. And that's a good thing about Microsoft stopping support of these older browsers, except in very specific circumstances. It means that, in a way, we've got to force clients and users to upgrade to better browsers, to more secure browsers. And so you've got the extra level of, if we support this, we're supporting something inherently insecure after a point, because it will come to end of life sooner rather than later. And also it's less for me to test in, which is always good, because cross-browser testing can take a while. GhostLab is still one of my go-to things for cross-browser testing as much as I can, because I like being able to test things efficiently, and GhostLab's a good way of doing that. It's really hard to make it work with VirtualBox, which is the VM I use for IE, because I'm on a Mac. But even if it means I just do the non-IE browser testing and then move on to IE separately, that's still a lot of time that I've saved, because I'm still doing three browsers at least at the same time. Generally speaking, I do cross-browser testing for each story. I generally test it in Chrome, because that's the browser I use first, just to make sure that the functionality is there, there's nothing majorly wrong that would stop me from testing it. Then I'll do cross-browser testing either through GhostLab or individually if it's not a huge story that won't take me too long to test, because sometimes setting up GhostLab can be a bit laborious, and so it is actually quicker just to fire up each browser individually and test them that way. Then towards the end of the project, basically when we're feature complete, there's still a few bugs hanging around. Maybe even when there's a period of UAT, I'll go and do a full test of the site in everything. So I'll test it in Chrome, which is one of the main browsers I use, just to make sure I've not missed anything integration-y. I'll then do some cross-browser and some device testing of all the bits that are risky, the bits of integration that I know I've not tested as much as I would have liked to, stuff that's maybe stuff from the early stories that might have changed a lot in the sprints. Basically, not quite an end-to-end test, but just to make sure it looks really polished and there's no little bits that we've caught before it gets handed over as a final finished for this phase of work project to the client, and they can go away and they don't have to worry too much about visual bugs or things not working quite right. It's going to be just almost change requests that come from the UAT when something hasn't quite been envisioned right, or stuff that they didn't realise they needed or wanted until this point when they've started using the site as a whole, they've started content population, stuff like that. That's generally what we want from UAT. It shouldn't be stuff that I've missed. Again, I favour session-based testing when it comes to this kind of stuff. It's a lot easier just to take screenshots as I go and notes, and then create the bugs afterwards instead of creating as I go. Although Jira Capture, again, does make that quite easy to do the whole doing bugs as you go, which is quite nice. But if I feel I get too distracted, then I'll just do one big session and then make any bugs that I need to after, especially if there's some stuff that I want to talk to devs about first. And my neighbour's just started drying hair, which I don't think you can hear on this, but I can hear here. So I am going to wrap this up here. I will see you all next week. And next week is Test Bash. What? So, yeah, I might actually see some of you next week. Have a great week. Bye.